Well, it's been just a delight to be here this week and to get to know you. I always enjoy getting to know different people and hearing testimonies. Yesterday, I got the chance to hear Dwayne's testimony and different ones, testimonies, things that they've gone through. Brother's cancer here, we talked about that last night, and I appreciated just thinking about how God brought him through that. And I'm glad to be here, and I really sense here a desire to serve the Lord. And you know that last song we sang about the first love? Isn't it so true how easily we can lose sight of that? You know, that's true in earthly relationships too. That, I remember the first time when Anita and I were on a date, we went to a play at Rosedale Bible College, Bible school back then, and it was called A Man Called Peter, and I can still remember sitting there beside each other, and our elbows touched, and I just still remember kind of that feeling that I had, our elbows touching, and, I am thankful today to say that we love each other more than we ever have, but it's something you got to work at. It's not something you can just take for granted. Well, we've been talking about looking at the family in light of the Ten Commandments. So we covered the first four first night. I did pretty good that first night, didn't I? I got through four one night. Have no other gods before me. And that is so important. Your earthly relationships are contingent. They're tied to your relationship with God. You're not going to be any better husband or father than what kind of relationship you have with God. Because that's where the source of love is. And when God calls us to love our neighbor as ourselves, we really can't do that until we're not looking at ourselves anymore. And the only way to do that is to have experienced the love that God has for us. Then we can stop looking at ourselves and we can truly look at another person. Not just love my wife for what she, will do for me, but love her whether she ever does anything for me again. Whether she, maybe today, she'll slip into some kind of a coma and live in a coma the rest of her life. I sure hope not. But would I still love her? Would I still care for her the rest of her life? Or do I just love her enough? Do I love her with one eye on her and one eye on myself? You know, what she's going to do for me. And really, that's the way human love is. But God's love is a love that both eyes can look on the recipient and love that person regardless of what's coming back. And I believe that's what God calls us to. And it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. So then we talked about how the next three commandments kind of fit with that first one. Love God with all your heart. And, today there's so many things that can kind of distract us from that first love. And some of the temptations we have are to take God's name in vain, where we say it, but we really don't mean it. It's just, we've got the right words to say. And, probably you're not even exempt from this here. We certainly aren't back at United Bethel. That we kind of give each other a pass if we say the right things. If you say the right things, we'll kind of let you go, and we won't meddle too much with what's going on in the rest of your life. So sometimes we're tempted to do that. Just say the right things. I love God, and I want to serve Him, and hopefully that's coming from a genuine heart, but sometimes it's just the right thing to say. So we don't want to love God like that, or we don't want to reshape Him into a God that we can really feel good about. There's just some parts of God that I'd just rather they weren't like that. This thing about the wrath that is to come. Why is God like that? So let's just take the wrath off. That's what a lot of preachers do today. They would teach you, don't talk about hell. That's a subject that's going to really, stir people up, make them feel upset. We don't want them to feel upset. We want them to feel happy so they keep coming and keep giving and all of that. But that's to reshape God. God said, this is the way it is. There's two choices, heaven or hell. And we need to keep that reality in the back of our minds all the time because it gives us a better picture of the grace that's been shown to us if we recognize that there is a place for those who've chosen to disobey God. So let's not reshape him in our image, make him some nice grandfatherly Santa Claus type God that just gives us all kinds of good things and really doesn't expect anything from us. That's not who God is. And so it would be wrong to say, I'm going to remake him the way I want, and then that's what I'm going to be happy serving him. Really what you're doing is you're serving your own creation. You're serving something you've made yourself. And if God is God, that means he's outside of us. He's bigger than we are. And we don't want to tamper with who he is. We want to accept what he says, even if we might struggle with it sometimes. And I have to admit, I struggle sometimes with the way God works. But I chalk that up to my lack of understanding and not his lack of character. God is good. And everything he allows to happen is good. And if I somehow don't understand that, it's only because I don't have all the information. It's not because he's all of a sudden bad. All right, so that was the first night. Then the next night we talked about the next commandment, which is after you get the first four, they're all about God. And then we talked about honoring your father and mother. And we talked about the importance of accepting the roles of authority in our lives, and especially that role of mother and father, and how important it is for us as parents to do our part in trying to help shape our young children's will and help them learn to say no to themselves and to say yes to us in a way of helping them to understand God's authority in their lives. And how important it was in my life to come to terms with, even though I thought my father was such an imperfect authority, yet to realize that God put him in my life for my good. And when I came to a place where I recognized that, how much God blessed me in that. And I've got brothers who I think probably in some ways are still kind of reacting against my father. And to think of how that affected the choices that they made in their life, and how it's not worth it. Just lay it down and say, I'm going to honor my parents regardless of whether they're perfect or not. The fact is, none of us had perfect parents. None of us are perfect parents. And so there's a place for honor that's outside of what we think they ought to be, but just because God put them there in our lives. And the truth is, we don't see straight anyway about ourselves. So, you know, it's not right for us to try to say, well, if my dad would just act a little better, or my mom would. No, we don't see straight. We act ways that we can't even quite understand. So that's why God wants us to honor, regardless of whether we think they're exactly where they ought to be. Well, what's next after honoring parents? Well, we kind of segued into honoring your wife, because the Bible talks about that, and also not committing adultery, and realizing that Jesus set the standard up. He said it's not just committing adultery, it's not just a physical act, but it's an act of the mind. And he said that if you lust on a woman, you look at a woman with lust in your heart, you've committed adultery with her already. Wow. And so we talked about how important it is. And you know what? Real love for your spouse, it's got to include your mind. If you're only faithful to her with your body, what kind of love is that? But if you're faithful to her with your mind, then you'll really be able to love each other. If you're both faithful to each other. And I think sometimes ladies can struggle with that too. If a man's not meeting her emotional needs, she can kind of get caught up in, some people call it emotional pornography. And I don't know if that's maybe too strong of a word, but reading books or watching things that just kind of stir up emotion. And she kind of fantasizes how things could be if her husband was just a little different and all of that. I think all of us need to love each other with our mind. Make sure that our mind is a private. It's not a place where we allow other strange women to come in, images or whatever, or other men or whatever. But we keep ourselves and our minds, not just our body, but our mind too. If you study things like sexual addiction, we didn't have time to get into that the other night, but so much of it is in the mind. I mean, it's almost all. It acts out in the physical, but it all starts in the mind. And so it's so right for Jesus to raise that standard. We wouldn't want to live under that Old Testament standard, really, would we? I mean, it wouldn't be right. It's not really understanding the spirit of the law of Christ or the spirit of loving our neighbor. is to try to act like, well, as long as I, you know, keep my body clean, then I can think whatever I want. That's not an intimate relationship. If you're not keeping your mind clean for your wife, you don't have intimacy. She knows, and she might not be able to put her finger on it, but you're not going to be close like you can be. And there's something so beautiful about growing old together, isn't there? And especially if you keep yourself for each other. If your wife has a slight inkling that you're not real happy with the fact that she's getting older, or you're kind of more excited about, you know, people that aren't quite so aged, well, you probably forgot to look in the mirror yourself. But anyway, you destroy intimacy right there. But if we can keep each other for each other all of our life, grow old together, there can be intimacy and desire there that just keeps right on going and gets better. And I thank the Lord for that. That's the way God set it up. You know, today we throw out marriage just as cheap as, you know, disposable plates or whatever. I mean, you just get tired of it, you can go on to another. That's not the way God set it up. And there's no real happiness there either. Not like the happiness of being able to look at each other and know that if your hair falls out, your wife's still going to love you. And if her hair turns just a slight gray, doesn't matter. I'm still loving her. And we're just going to grow old together, and we're thankful for that. There's an intimacy there. There's a security there that you won't have if your mind's not part of your marriage. All right, then we talked about, see, would that be last night now? What did we talk about last night? Don't kill, right? And we don't kill, hopefully. Hopefully that's not real a big problem here. But don't be angry. And we talked a little bit about the effects of anger and also of how children, how we can anger our children and how important it is that we not frustrate them or provoke them to anger. And in some ways, this commandment this morning ties into that a little bit. How many commandments we have left? Two. Actually, I've got three. What are they? Don't steal. Don't covet. And don't bear false witness or don't lie. All right. I wish I was down to just two. So we're going to have to cut one of them out, I guess. But tonight we're going to talk about coveting. Because I think that's a key, that's so key. It's the one commandment that really gets at the heart of things. I mean, from the Old Testament, when they talked about not coveting, that was really a hard issue. And we're going to see how that is so crucial to all the rest of the commandments that God gives us. So today we're going to talk mostly, maybe a little bit about not lying. That's such an important one, but hopefully you've talked about that, and you know that it's so important that we not lie to each other. But I'd like to talk about stealing because I'd like to talk about it in relationship to the family. How do we steal in a family setting? I mean, we don't steal, right? Hopefully not. It's interesting, there's a verse in Proverbs that says, give neither poverty nor riches, right? That's our verse, right? We don't want poverty, and we don't want riches either, right? So why did he say no poverty? Or no riches. Let's do that one first. Why no riches? Yeah, we forget God. That's right. And that's what happens, isn't it? And I agree with what was said today. I think a lot of our current situation in our country, economically or whatever, is a result of greed. I mean, we were living higher than a hog, and we, you know, that's a Southern phrase, right? So I'm still from... we were living higher than a hog, and we couldn't afford the kind of lifestyle that we had. And I think there's some good things that can come out of that. But we don't want to forget God, do we? So easy to do it. But also, don't let me be poor, or else I might steal. And then do what? You have to look this up for me. I think it says something about blaspheme or. Something about the name of the Lord. Somebody help me out. I forgot to write that down. I just kind of came to my mind right now. If you find it, just wave your hand and help me out. But it has something to do with when you steal, You are. It's a direct act against God. If you can help me out there, you know, we might actually face some of this. If times get hard, you think we might be tempted to steal? Maybe in ways that we haven't been tempted to steal so far. Might be tempted to steal from the government. Might be tempted already to steal from the government, huh? It's sometimes tempting, isn't it? If you're self-employed, sometimes you don't have to write down every little thing that comes in. Do you steal from the government? I remember one time I bought a truck, and the guy that I bought it from, he said, "Hey, you know, why don't we just write down a dollar?" And I said, "No, I don't. I said, "I write down what I paid you." He said, "Well, I'll just leave it blank." And I said, "Well, I'm going to tell him what I paid you for it." And he thought that was just nuts. So I went down to the license bureau or whatever, and I forgot to write it in. Well, I wasn't sure if I should write it in because he was supposed to write it in. So I just told the lady. I said, "Actually, I paid $3,000 for this truck," and or I forget what, $4,000, whatever it was. And she said, "You didn't write down what you wanted to?" I said, "Well, that wouldn't be right." And my son was standing there with me, and she looked at him and she said, "You got a daddy that's got integrity." And, you know, that was worth it. I mean, you know, part of me didn't want to pay that tax, but I'd rather live with a clear conscience. I don't want to steal. I don't want to steal from the government. God provides for us, doesn't he? You got it. What does it say? Proverbs 38:9. Let me read that. Proverbs 38. Tell me, 28? Oh, okay, 30. I was looking for 38. Woo. Oh, my. I should know there's only 31, right? It's because I was up front, right? "Remove far from me vanity and lies. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with food convenient for me, lest I be full and deny thee and say, 'Who is the Lord?' Or lest I be poor and steal and take the name of my God in vain." That interesting kind of ties back to those first commandments. Stealing is a way of taking God's name in vain, where we're not realizing he will provide what we need. And so if I take from somebody else, I'm actually saying, "God, you're not going to provide what I need." Or I could be saying that. Or I'm not taking him very seriously when I steal. Or we could steal from our bosses, like slacking on the job, you know, kind of taking advantage or whatever. But that's not totally connected to family. What about the church? Can you steal in the church from each other? Let's think relationally. Yeah, hopefully there's no actual stealing going on, you know, in the church. But what about relationally? And I think one of the ministers talked about this a little bit the other day, but if you think about Leviticus 19, there's kind of a fascinating phrase there, where it says, Leviticus 19 is basically going over the whole thing of loving your neighbor as yourself. Talks about honoring father and mother, the first part. Talks about how you should leave grain for your neighbor and things like that. Not curse the deaf or put a stumbling block in front of the blind. You know, things that we, you know, you just don't treat your neighbor like that. Verse 16 says, "Thou shalt not go up and down as a talebearer among thy people, neither shalt thou stand against the blood of thy neighbor. I am the Lord." Talebearer. You know, sometimes I think we're kind of careless with the reputation of another person. And that's something we can steal from somebody else. We can steal their reputation by talking about them. Might be true, might not be totally true. But the way we do it is a way of kind of dismantling their reputation. I think we should be careful about that. But here's another thing it says. "Thou shalt not hate thy brother in thine heart. Thou shalt in any wise rebuke thy neighbor." Now you would think, following that, "don't hate your brother," that it would say, "don't rebuke him," right? Isn't that the way we see love today? Don't hate him. Don't rebuke him. But it actually says, "don't hate him. Rebuke him." And could I say to you that, I think maybe Brother Jerry referred to this the other night, we need other people in our lives to tell us what it is, to tell us how they see things. We need somebody to help us see straight, because none of us can really see totally straight about ourselves. We can't. And that's the beauty of accountability in a congregation, in a church, is you've got a brother who can come to you and say, you know what? Maybe this isn't from God, I don't know, but I just felt like I needed to talk to you about this. And if we can be open to that, I know there's been times when brothers have come and talked to me about things, and at the time I might have been a little bit irritated or just felt a little defensive or whatever, but after a while, I look back and I say, that fellow loved me. That fellow loved me. And I have a deep appreciation for that, because I know how difficult it is. Man, I could much rather stand up here and just preach and just really let you have it rather than talk to one of you one-on-one about a specific issue. It's tough, isn't it? It's hard. It's hard. But I think it's one way that we love each other. And there's a sense in which we steal from each other when we're not willing to do the job that God has given us to do, to just talk to each other about in ways. And you got to have a relationship to do it, right? I mean, you can't do it if you've never, said boo to the guy. But if you've got a relationship, and that's when it kind of gets hard. But if you've got a relationship, you will do a world of good if you're willing to say, are you really on fire for the Lord? Yeah, are you more excited about God than you are about sports? Or whatever it might happen to be. And if we're willing to talk to each other like that, man, it can make a difference. I don't think a church is really a lot more spiritual than its willingness to talk to each other. And I'm not talking from the preacher down. I'm talking about from a brother to a brother and a sister to a sister. Sister saying to somebody else, I hate to say this, but I don't really think what you wore last night was very modest. Would we be willing to say that stuff to each other? I think we should. I mean, I know it's hard. But I've experienced it enough to know that it's right and good for us to be willing to share with each other at that level. And I think that really is the level of spiritual life in the church. It's how much we're willing to share. So don't steal that from each other. What keeps us from doing it? We're scared. And also, we don't really, our flesh doesn't want anybody to talk to us. But we know that's not right. I mean, we know we're not better off that way, are we? Are we better off if everybody just leaves us alone? No, we need each other. So let's fight that individualism thing. What about from your spouse? How do you steal from your spouse? Hopefully you don't take money out of your husband's wallet without permission, right? Or out of your wife's purse without permission. Does that happen? Maybe that's something you can work out at home. But I was thinking about the roles that husbands and wives play in the family and how it's important that we not steal those roles and that we value those roles. And I just want to put a plug in here for young moms and the difficulty it is to take care of your children. You might be tempted to kind of say, I think I'm not very fulfilled in this job. And I think I'd like to go and put them in a daycare and go back to work. And I would just say to you, I think that it may be necessary in some cases, but I don't think that that's really giving your children what they need. And I would encourage you not steal your children's childhood from them by putting them, in some kind of a more institutional setting. What they need is a mom who cares for them and spends time with them, and there's nobody else that's going to care for those young children like their mom is. And I would encourage you to be willing to make that an important role. The Bible talks about women being keepers of the home, and it has this idea, I think, of providing an atmosphere there that everybody feels safe. And I think that's such a crucial role that women play. I would also say to you women that you not try to steal your husband's role of leadership. It's so easy. There's so many men today, and I'm one of them, that just ought to do better at the role of being a leader. And we live in so many, there's so many things that can distract us, and we can get busy, and we can think, we can get kind of confused about what it means to provide. You know, we think providing means keeping up with the guy who's, the Lord is blessed with the ability to make money. That's not what it means. And of course, that guy has some responsibility to try to live, you know, in less than what he's got. But there's so much emphasis today on, you know, really trying to provide and get ahead and make sure that everybody sees that I'm really taking care of my family, when really the most important ways of taking care of your family might not even be there. And so I know for you women, sometimes when you see us men not really doing our job of being the spiritual leaders in the home, it might be tempting for you to kind of step up and say, well, if he's not going to do it, I am. And I'm not saying there's not a place for a woman to try to make up, to plant a spiritual atmosphere in a home where the father is not a leader. But I'm talking about just taking over the responsibility. I would encourage you to pray for your husband and pray that God will awaken in him the desire to lead. You know, today in our culture, I don't know that there's anybody more confused today than men are about what their job is in the home and what their job is in the world. And then we've got a lot of boys that are growing up with some of that same confusion. Now, it's not here in the church, hopefully, as much, but it's definitely all around us. Men don't really know what their purpose is. Why are they here? Are they just here to keep up, you know, to be the greatest fan that you could ever be? Or are they here to just see how they, and fathers drift in and out of homes, and they don't know if they're really needed or not? And it's caused so much hurt and damage in our culture. And when you step up and take over, you might just cause your husband to feel even more like, well, what purpose do I have? And I know it seems like things are so crucial, you know, that somebody's got to lead out here. And if he doesn't, but I would just encourage you to pray and wait on the Lord. Don't take over his job. And pray that God will, and if you will respect your husband and wait on him and pray that God will give him desire to lead out, I believe that'll be a much greater chance that he actually will lead out if you're waiting on him to do it. I know it's not easy. I know it's not easy, but I'd encourage you. And if you can meet your husband's need for respect, not put him down for what kind of a lousy person that he is, and, you know, nag him. You know, we men don't really, we're not very motivated by nagging. I suppose you've realized that already, but it just doesn't work very good. But if you can ask God to change your husband and then trust God enough that you can support your husband and respect him, that'll do a lot in helping him be the man that God wants him to be. I think we husbands can steal from our wives too when we let ourselves get distracted from the relationship and don't take time to take care of her. Might be as lousy a reason as just wanting to do my own thing. Or it might be as noble a reason as doing the Lord's work. But if we're not taking care of our wife, then we're stealing from her. One of the things I think is so important today, you know, if it's kind of like food. We have so many options for food, right? I mean, you can eat anything. You can eat, you could just eat ice cream all the time. And would that be good for us? Do you teach your children to just eat whatever they want? No. Do you eat dessert first at your house? Well, maybe a few times, but probably not. It doesn't work, does it? Okay, eat as much ice cream as you want, and then after that, we're going to have green beans. Yeah, right. I really am ready for green beans. No, that's not the way we do it. Why? Because there's so many choices. If all we had to eat was rice and beans, we just eat that. We wouldn't talk a lot about what we ought to eat, would we? But today, we talk about it. Yeah, you know, you want to eat healthy, and you want to eat this, and not too much of that, and all that. And the reason is we've got so many choices, and that's true with time, too. There was a time when we just worked from sun up to sundown, and you just did it because that's what it took to eke out a living. Well, that's not how it is today. And we don't have to work all the time. And so there's choices that we make. So what are we going to do with those choices? And to me, all of a sudden, it gets a little complicated. Well, I don't know. These people really seem like they need me, and I need to go over there. But my wife looks at me, or your wife looks at you, and she says, you know, what about us? And you think, well, this is the Lord's work. And so, no. I think one of the important things for us to do is ask ourselves this question. Can anybody else do what I'm not going to do? Or can anybody else do what I think I should do? You know, sometimes things seem so terribly important. But the question to ask is, what am I supposed to do that nobody else can do? Now, I hope I'm not offending any of the ministers here and trying to make them think that church ought to be second or whatever. I'm not. I think church should be very important. It should be. I think you ought to be here. And I appreciate the fact that you've been here and been involved. I think that's so important. But I think that it's important for us to ask ourselves, can anybody else do what I'm not going to do? Can anybody else be a father to my children? I mean, not the way I can. Can somebody else go do whatever needs to be done? Yeah, and sometimes I just pray, Lord, would you lay it on somebody's heart? I see this need, and I feel like it needs to be done, but I can't do it. Would you lay it on somebody's heart to do it? And God has often answered that prayer for me, and I'm so glad for that. And I think if we will remember, what are the things that nobody else can do? Can anybody else love your wife? No. Nobody else is going to be able to meet her needs the way you are. So don't steal from each other. And from our children. Are we supposed to be done by 11:30? Is that normal quitting time? I'm used to one, but no, I'm just kidding. I'll try to wrap her up here pretty quick. We just have our children for such a short time. Such a short time. You ask anybody that's got children grown, you know it's not very long. And yet, when you're in the middle of it, sometimes it seems like there's so many important things. And I just want to say, if you've got young children and you're a Christian, you've got responsibilities in the church, you've got to provide for your children, for your family, you need to maintain your relationship with your wife, you've got a hobby, and your hobby is your children. You're going to need wisdom just to know how to do those things. And so, remember, we live in seasons of life. There's going to be more time later when the children are grown for other things. There's things that Brother Gary can do that I can't do because his children are grown. And I think that's all right. I don't think I ought to try to keep up with Gary or, you know, try to do there's seasons. And so if you're in a season with children at home, I would encourage you, don't steal from them by not being there for them. Make memories with them. And not memories of, you know, just doing things vicariously like watching somebody else do something, but doing things together, the actual, you know, going out and accomplishing things or doing things together that you can look back on and remember what you did together and times when you build relationships and you talked, and make that a priority. I have just seen, my family's still young, so jury's still out, isn't it? Jury's still out. But I have seen it so often, I think I can speak confidently that when parents make their children a priority and make memories with them, those relationships go on into adulthood. And that's what we all want. It's kind of scary having children. I mean, it is. Now you bring these people into the world that you feel responsible for and have a great amount of responsibility for, and yet they have their own will. And they can make their own choices. And if you want to speak into their lives later, I think it's pretty important from what I've observed and from what I think Scripture teaches that we build relationships when they're young. I want to close with a song that Harry Chapin wrote. You've probably heard it before. It's called Cats in the Cradle. I'd like to sing it for you, but I know you'd all just disappear quick, so... And we're supposed to have fellowship meal afterwards, and I don't know how we'd get everybody back together. So I'll just read it. My child arrived just the other day. He came to the world in the usual way, but there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away, and he was talking for I knew it, and as he grew, he said, "I'm going to be like you, Dad. You know I'm going to be like you." And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man in the moon. "When are you coming home, Dad?" "I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then." My son turned 10 just the other day. He said, "Thanks for the ball, Dad. Come out, let's play. Can you teach me to throw?" I said, "Not today. Got a lot to do." He said, "That's okay," and he walked away, and his smile never dimmed. Said, "I'm going to be like him. Yeah, you know I'm going to be like him." Cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. "When are you coming home, Dad?" "I don't know when, but we'll get together then, son. You know we'll have a good time then." Well, he came from college just the other day. So much like a man, I just had to say, "Son, I'm proud of you. Can I sit for a while?" Shook his head, and he said with a smile, "What I really like, Dad, is to borrow the car keys. See you later. Can I have them, please?" Cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man in the moon. "When are you coming home, son?" "I don't know when, but we'll get together then, Dad. You know we'll have a good time then." I've long since retired, and my son's moved away. I called him up just the other day. I said, "I'd like to see you if you don't mind." He said, "I'd love to, Dad, if I could just find the time. You see, my new job's a hassle and the kids got the flu. But it's sure been nice talking to you, Dad. Sure been nice talking to you." And as I hung up the phone, it occurred to me, he'd grown up just like me. My boy was just like me. Sometimes it's as simple as, am I going to pursue my own goals? Or am I going to lay down my life or my neighbor, who is the person that needs me right now the most? Ephesians 4:28 says, "Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing which is good." Why? "That he might have to give to him that needeth." We've heard that verse many times, and it's obviously first application is in a financial way. But I think it also relates to our relationships. If you have stolen, quit stealing. Quit stealing. And work. You know what? It's just work. That's just the way it is. Might as well grow up and realize that it's going to take work. Relationships take work. Work so that you have to give to the one who needs. And the one who needs are the ones that nobody else can minister to like you can. We all play a role. We all have different times. We all have different areas, seasons of life. But pay attention. Right now, just think about who it is that needs me. And make sure that you are loving that neighbor as you would want to be loved. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for the way that you've demonstrated love to us through sending your son Jesus to die for us even before we understood our need for you and or were willing to yield our wills to you, yet you died for us. And Lord, I pray that you would be with each one of us here today, that you would help us to think about our neighbors, especially those closest to us, those that perhaps sometimes we tend to steal from in order to look good or appear religious or maybe just because we want to have fun. Forgive us, Lord, for those ways that we've stolen and help us to steal no more, but to be willing to labor, to work, so that we have to give to those who have need. Lord, help us to really love our families in a sacrificial way. We ask this in Jesus' name.